And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Please don't forget, you can always go to the website, www.nagb.org.bs. Not only can you listen to the archive show, but you can also look at our calendar, see what's upcoming. We have always about 3 to 4 shows on at the National Art Gallery. We have a monthly film night where we bring lots of different kinds of movies that are always free. We have lectures, we have different kinds of nights, and pretty much everything is free, all the events we do. During the week, there is a small fee to get to the National Art Gallery, but of course, on Sundays, it is always free to all Bahamians and residents of the Bahamas. That is Sunday from noon to 5, so there's no reason not to come. We are there for you, and we really encourage you to participate and get to know your art scene and support your artists, one of whom I have in the studio with me tonight, LeVar Monroe. Hello again. We've been together for the half hour. But for people just tuning in, LeVar is a local artist who was born in Grantstown and went to he went to the Savannah College of Art and Design in the States, having been to school here at Kingsway Academy, he said, and then went on to grad school and has since grad school really been having a really interesting career that's just been going from strength to strength. His work is sometimes a little bit disturbing, but very deep, dealing with different kind of observations in society. Mm-hmm. You started out kind of very graphically. Your early work really does look like graphic design in a way, and then you kind of grew into collage and drawing, and you sort of expanded into painting. And mm-hmm. Your painting is, I know a lot of people that really admire your painting very much. And we just before the break were speaking about how you were invited to participate in the Venice Biennale, which is this biannual art event which just draws pretty much everyone who is anyone and everyone who is just anybody from the art world to Venice. I mean, Venice just turns into this. Basically, the entire city of Venice empties and it just gets full of art people.
Pretty much.
You run into just curators from everywhere around the world and collectors and art aficionados. And after the opening weekend, it's open for several months and they get up to 400,000 visitors. Mm. This is why I keep pushing culture to the government here, because it is a draw. It really brings, whether it's Art Basel, Miami Beach, or the Venice Biennale, people get on planes and they fly to see culture. And that's why I'm so driven to let the world know that the Bahamas is a place of culture and a place of thinking people and a place of creative people, and not just a place where everyone's kind of lounging around under a palm tree. So the work you took to the Venice Biennial was a series of canvases. One of them was something to do with Pinocchio.
Oh, Pinocchio's half-sister.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And they were paintings, but by that point, you'd sort of broken free from the kind of traditional rectangular square kind of canvas format.
Uh-huh.
And you were cutting the canvas, and there were holes in it, and you were kind of attaching things. I remember there was one which had like a tennis ball on it, and there were some of them had the shanks that we spoke about before the break hanging off. And one had a Band-Aid on it, and there was all these kind of things. They were essentially paintings, but how did you get there? What made you, like, break free from that kind of format of the square or the rectangle?
It's an interesting story, actually. it happened in grad school. I was doing this painting. I was having, like, trouble with it, like, real trouble, like, very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I had a knife in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you were, was this pre-shank period?
It was a pre-shank.
Pre-shank,
yeah.
Because otherwise it would be normal.
What is the knife doing in my studio? But anyway, it was actually a kitchen knife. And I just got so frustrated and I just took the canvas and I just cut out that area. And it was a huge area. I just cut it out and I just left the canvas there. And I had a critique that Friday with that painting. And I put it in the critique room and conversations began. And then for me to, it was frustration, but I also began to think about breaking the mold of the canon. So the canon being well-primed canvases, well-stretched canvases, well-preserved, holy with gloves, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that notion of art really frustrated me. But yeah, early on it was frustration, and then as I continued, it became a stylistic move. And the canvas for me became like flesh. And I started to use the canvas as a metaphor for flesh. So you mm-hmm. think about the violence that's in the work. I'm thinking mm-hmm. about people being stabbed, people being surgically repaired, people mm-hmm. being stapled together, people mm-hmm. being sewn together. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in many ways, it became a flesh for me.
Mm-hmm. Hence the Band-Aid.
Hence the Band-Aid. So right. you have Band-Aids, staples, mm-hmm. gauze. I mean, you name it. So anything surgical, anything mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. that speaks about injury mm-hmm. or healing mm-hmm. or repair, I mm-hmm. mean, you could find in my canvases.
Mm-hmm. Do you think about, I mean, so from a museum professional standpoint, that's like a horror show, right?
No, I know.
because of course, to preserve that is mm-hmm. going to be such the challenge. Do you think about that, or are you just like, well, that's their problem? I mean, not in a blasé way, but I mean, obviously, these are your children to a certain degree, right? You know, the Band-Aid is going to be something that's going to peel off eventually. So is that person going to, is there a brand they have to go by? Do you think about it to that degree? Like, okay, you have to get this kind of Band-Aid, or I'm going to give you this box of Band-Aids, or... Like, how do you think about that in terms of survivability?
So that's the museum's and the collector's problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just like buying a car.
Sure, of course.
I mean, you have to maintain it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a very specific set of problems, right? So would you care if they stuck on a Barbie bandage instead of a regular...
They mostly are Barbie bandages. Yeah.
Actually, they are. I think that's why I said it, because they're your daughters,
yeah,
right?
They're my daughter's bandages. Yeah. So they mostly are.
Yeah, yeah. Princess. Okay, so princess. What if they got the car's Band-Aid?
Oh, I don't know. That might be a problem. Yeah, that might be a problem.
No, but I mean, once you've let the work go, I don't want to say not care, because obviously you care, but is it, because, you know, there's some artists that are like, no, it has to be this way, it has to be this light bulb, you can't use that light bulb, it has to be this light bulb. If you went back and you saw that and there was a different kind of Band-Aid, or the tennis ball had rotted and they'd hung, I don't know, a different tennis ball or a golf ball, would that bother you, or would you just
be
like...
It would bother me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If the tennis ball rot, I want it to be rot.
Okay.
Maybe it rot off.
Yeah.
But if they put like a golf ball on it, mm-hmm. I mean, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be very bothered.
Yeah.
But I kind of think about work as life. Mm-hmm. You know, like
it's going to decay.
It's going to decay eventually, anyway. Yeah, and this is the best of works.
Yeah,
I mean, your Picasso's having to constantly be.
Yeah. They've all changed colors over the years. The varnish has to get changed. And
restoration is a thing.
But it's interesting because that actually makes me think of two things. One, it makes me think of Junkanoo immediately.
Uh-huh.
Immediately, because I think one of the beauties of Junkanoo is the ephemeral quality of the costumes,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's always like, oh, why can't we preserve them? But I think, no, that's kind of defeats the purpose because it's like a memento mori, right? It's like, enjoy this now because tomorrow we could be dead.
Yeah.
And there's something about beauty that dies, flowers, trees, fruits, whatever. There's something natural.
Human beings.
Human beings, again, of course. So I think that's really, really interesting. So for me, that mathematically, and maybe it doesn't to you, or that wasn't a thought, but to me, it takes me right back to there.
No, yeah. I mean, not so much Junkanoo. I don't know. For me, it's expected to speak about my work in mm-hmm. terms of Junkanoo, mm-hmm. which I'm totally...
No, I know it's not. I know you're against it, but it's just like, to me, that's for me, one of the beauties of Junkanoo,
uh-huh,
is that it's not preserved. And, and I think that's kind of one of the great things about it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But yeah, paper preservation, I mean, even the cardboard I use, I mean, obviously it's going to deteriorate.
Yep.
But now with this high-tech museum, MoMA and the rest.
Sure, they can, no, listen, they can...
They can get rid of acid and...
they can get rid of all kinds of things. I've seen amazing things happen. And you see a drawing that is just, you think it's a mess and for the garbage, and somebody can restore that now.
Definitely.
So it is amazing.
Yeah, definitely. So
is that, I mean, I know we spoke about this kind of... And I think this was also part of your work to a certain degree. You did the series of The Human Zoo.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for any of us from the islands and, you know, more so for someone who, again, you know, I'm put in a box just as much as you are. But, you know, this is kind of like because I'm white and because I'm this, you know, I can kind of cross boundaries. Do you feel like you're... expected to be a certain way, and how frustrating is that for you? Like, again, you know, oh, here you are, the exotic animal, like, oh, Lavar, this tall, beautiful, gazelle-like person who's emerged from the Caribbean. How much of that just irritates you, but also do you find you can ever use that to an advantage?
You know, I played the game.
Yeah, I know, and I know, yeah. That's why I asked the question.
And I played the game very well.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question.
Yeah, I played the game very well. So it's a yin-yang, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I like the attention.
Yeah.
But I don't like to be pigeonholed.
Yeah. Well, listen, women have been, you know, again, that this happened in the 70s, right? Women's art shows.
So there's
a part of it that's a necessity that you have to just deal with for a certain time because that's going to get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And then at a certain time, you're like, okay, I'm over that now.
Yeah.
I got through the door now, and now I don't want to be put in those women's art shows anymore. So again, yeah. You know, the same thing happened with gender, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think it happens with every kind of wave. Oh, Chinese art. Oh, Bohemian art. Right. So
yeah. So and that's how it was in the beginning for mm-hmm. me. I mean, mm-hmm. I played all my cards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't have to, but I mean, that's just a route I took.
Yeah.
But now I'm at the point where
you can break
I'm
free of that,
breaking free and turning mm-hmm. down this and turning mm-hmm. down that. I mean, I'm in full control right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose exactly what I want to do, how I want to do it, and make sure it's done at a high quality
mm-hmm.
at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm to the point now where I'm mm-hmm. demanding what
right.
needs to be done, as opposed to being told, okay, this needs to be there. Mm-hmm. You need to be in this show. You need to be in mm-hmm. that show. It doesn't
right.
work like that anymore.
Right, right.
So I think I'm in a good place.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, but again, I think wasn't that a necessary part of your career to be like having someone guiding
you
and
helping
you?
Yeah, you have to go through the ropes.
Yeah, you have to go through the ropes.
Yeah. And I think...
Pay your dues, as it were.
Yeah, pay your dues. But I think, unlike many artists, my journey has been quick.
Yeah, it has, actually.
Like,
your journey's
been
very quick.
The things that I'm doing, people do at 50 and 60.
No, that's true.
You know.
So now the thing is the longevity.
The longevity,
you don't want to burn out, right? You don't want to be the next hot thing that then burned out.
And everyone's like,
oh, whatever happened to so-and-so, right?
Yeah.
And that, some of that we've talked about off-air is like going to too big a gallery that then,
you're
just up in the stratosphere and no one ever hears about you ever again because you're up in a part which doesn't reach normal people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there's two things. We've got about 10 minutes left that were recent, and then the upcoming thing, which is one, you recently were in Africa on a residency.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of an interesting development. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know, like, because I think, you know, again, when you're from an African diaspora country, right, there's a sort of romanticization of the motherland.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there, of course, there's a very deep connection, but there's also not, I mean, again, you know, people of African descent have been living on this side of the Atlantic for 200 years, so have evolved into different beings than beings in Africa, right?
Uh-huh.
Even though there's, of course, this connection. What made you want to go? Was that something you chased after? Or was that something that landed in your lap?
No, that was an invitation.
That was an invitation.
Yeah, but I've been to Africa before, mm-hmm. obviously, mm-hmm. And it was never in that context.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in Dakar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a city.
Yeah,
like
New
York.
Yeah, Dakar is a major city. Yeah, yeah.
So this residency was not Dakar.
Right, because you were like off in the bush.
I was
almost
in a village.
Yeah, yeah,
I was
in
like with thatch, like mm-hmm. people with thatch homes. I didn't even know they still existed.
Mm-hmm.
People walking around pretty much naked, bathing
mm-hmm.
outside. There were
mm-hmm.
more animals than humans.
Mm-hmm.
There's no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
They are fetching water from wells. So it was very, very old, you
mm-hmm.
know, a very old feel.
Mm-hmm.
There was one chief.
Mm-hmm.
A village chief who kind of ran and oversaw everything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no violence,
mm-hmm.
no petty theft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was an experience, but it was humbling.
Mm-hmm.
There was a language barrier,
mm-hmm.
obviously. But at the end of the day, we learned to communicate
mm-hmm.
through creativity,
mm-hmm.
which was good. Most of my time there, I did not work. Like,
mm-hmm.
I didn't. So what I was doing, I was being a hunter-gatherer.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about that space and Africans within the village hunting and gathering for them, for their families.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing the same thing, but my hunting, gathering was sort of material.
Mm-hmm.
So I was gathering, I was collecting a lot of found fabrics. So
mm-hmm.
there's a huge abundance of fabric for some reason,
mm-hmm.
but found fabrics, soccer balls,
mm-hmm.
ropes, and a bunch of stuff that I kind of use as collage for my work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think one interesting outcome that came out of my stay there was this project I began where it was a soccer ball exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the kids there, they stop school at sixth grade
mm-hmm.
and they just stay home and play soccer all day.
Mm-hmm.
So soccer is usually the way out
mm-hmm.
of the village
mm-hmm.
for many of the kids. But many of them were making their own soccer ball. So if
mm-hmm.
the ball wasn't extremely destroyed,
mm-hmm.
they would make their own balls. So what I did was I would go in the city,
mm-hmm.
I would buy a dray load of soccer balls, new soccer balls,
mm-hmm.
and I would exchange for their destroyed soccer balls.
Oh, okay.
And from that, I made like a small installation.
Mm-hmm.
But I could just remember like every morning, knocks on my door, dray loads of kid,
mm-hmm.
Baloo, that's what they call it,
mm-hmm.
ball,
mm-hmm.
Baloo. But I mean, that within itself was very rewarding for me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then now, I mean, the soccer balls are in my studio in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really used them really yet,
mm-hmm.
But probably will. I've been invited by Mokata to do an exhibition down there later down this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking the soccer balls, it's just going to do like a soccer ball installation.
How does it feel to... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, how does it feel to like go from that environment where, again, life is so urgent in a way or basic, and then to shift back into the art world, which is can be so, especially, you know, the art world in the United States, which can be on this level of sort of unreality.
Yeah. I don't know. I think leaving the village, Cynthian, I just had a much better appreciation for life, period. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys don't have 2 cents to rub together. Mm-hmm. And they're the happiest people alive.
Mm-hmm.
Very happy, stress-free, and just living.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the U.S., it nearly was like a burden. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like, mm-hmm. I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave the village. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back to electricity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to go to AC. I want to stay in this heat.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that type of that type of feeling when I had to leave and go back. But I will be back in Africa in January.
Great.
To spend more time,
mm-hmm.
yeah, both in the village, but also in Dakar. I'm doing a residency in Dakar also,
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Well, you know, we're 3 minutes left, so it's going to be very quick. It goes so far, so it's great to hear, but you're still going to keep your studio at home?
Yeah, I'm going to keep my studio at home. I'm going to spend more time at home.
Mm-hmm. Which
hopefully.
Is good.
Yeah.
And then we'll be seeing your work also in Prospect New Orleans, which is happening in November.
November, yeah. It's not the next big show, it's a big show. But
it's a big show, but it's one of those shows that it gets a lot of international attention.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think something that, again, is just another mark of, you know, the path in your career. You still got plenty of places to go, but it's a rite of passage. And, and you know, certainly I know I'm going to be there to cheer you on. I hope some other Bahamians are going to come out too.
Thank you.
Of course. And just have really enjoyed listening to all of that. So, Lavar, I want to thank you for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
It's always a joy.
Well, it is. It is. It's always a joy to just, again, talk about what we love and listen to these really... I mean, I think everyone has a different journey, and it's just so interesting to learn, like, how you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And also that, you know, you want to come back home and work here.
Yeah,
and
I think that's important,
and I think it's great to hear, because I think many people feel, you know, yes, we have to go away to make our mark, but you can come back, and you can come back and continue to have a relationship to the world, and still have a relationship to home too. And
I think that's
really important.
Yep.
So welcome home.
Thank you.
So that was Lavar Monroe, artist born in Grantstown, raised here, went to college in the States, and is now really on this amazing international path and working between the United States, Africa, and the Bahamas. So we hope to see more of him. Really great to have him in the studio tonight. And anyone that wants to listen to that show again, just go to www.nagb.org.bs. You can listen to the entire show and all the other archive shows. And don't forget, while you're on the website, to look at the calendar of what we have upcoming. Don't forget, the NAGB is always free on Sundays, so we have a lot going on, and we really love our audiences to come and get involved. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.